Hi, Yumna. How you doing?
Hey Dave, I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So Yumna Patel is our Palestine correspondent, and she's been based in Bethlehem in the West Bank for the past several years. We're going to talk to her today to find out what folks in Palestine are thinking about the upcoming or ongoing U.S. election and what they hope may come out of it. So, like I said, you've been based there in Palestine through. Oh, and there may be some call to prayer noise in the background because it's that time in Palestine. So, just enjoy it. So, yeah, you've been based in Palestine there during the entire Trump term. What is different now compared to before Trump took office? Have you seen the effects of some of the policies and changes that he and his administration and Kushner have been pushing? Do you see them there on the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely, of course, see the policy changes on the ground. Those were almost immediate as they started coming, over the years. But specifically in terms of the elections, I mean, I remember that I was here in 2016, so I was here throughout the election cycle and sort of leading up to Trump's win. And so I've seen, kind of the difference in the approach to the elections that Palestinians have had in 2016 versus now. And there's definitely a difference between how people are reacting to Trump. And I think it's a sentiment that's shared by a lot of people around the world, not just in Palestine, and also in the US as well. I remember during the 2016 elections, a lot of my Palestinian friends and colleagues found Trump amusing and, we're sort of laughing all throughout his campaign and even right up to and after the election. And as you definitely know, that was also the approach that a lot of Americans had, that a lot of people in the US media and a lot of people around the world had, was that Trump was treated as just this laughing stock because he was so far off from what, people around the world had seen before coming into office in the US. And so there was at the beginning in 2016, there was definitely a sense here that people had of, well, America has wreaked havoc in Palestine and across the Middle East for generations. So America kind of deserves Trump and was getting what's coming. And it doesn't mean that Palestinians haven't sympathized with marginalized communities in the US who have suffered under Trump's administration over the past 4 years. It just means that they think Trump has sort of pulled down the facade of democracy and freedom that America was promoting itself as for so many years. And it actually, Trump's ascent to power essentially exposed Americans to what the rest of the world had been suffering for hundreds of years at the hands of, American imperialism and colonialism. This time around, I think things aren't as lighthearted as they were 4 years ago. Even when discussing Trump leading up to the elections, people aren't really laughing anymore. And again, that's not just here. I think that's everywhere else around the world and even in the US. Because Palestinians, like the rest of us, have witnessed just how dangerous Trump has been over the past 4 years, especially to the Palestinian people and to their cause. Trump has consistently denied basic Palestinian rights, like the right to self-determination and sovereignty over their land, the right of return to refugees, et cetera. Many Palestinians have told me that Trump essentially gave their land to Israel as a gift over the past 4 years. That's, essentially the approach that the Trump administration has taken here in Israel and Palestine. So people are much more wary this time around, I think, of what 4 more years of Trump could mean. And there's more skin in the game for Palestinians this time around, and it's definitely, you can feel that for sure.
I remember when I was in Palestine going back to 2004, it was fairly common for me to hear people say that they wanted George Bush to win that election against John Kerry because they felt that he was kind of more of an honest broker. But that you're not hearing that about how they view the Republicans or the conservative right-wing candidate this time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think anyone was ever under the impression, even back in 2016, that Trump was going to be an honest broker, peace in the region. And from when you were here to 4 years ago, enough time had passed where the Palestinians have or their attitude towards the U.S. have really been solidified through experience and through history, in terms of the fact that Palestinians at the end of the day know that the U.S. will always be, you know, Israel's strongest ally, and at the end of the day are inclined to tailor their policy towards Israel's interest. It's just that Trump has gone sort of above and beyond that, above and beyond what people expected.
I know over the past few days you've been talking to people on the street about their election, and we're going to add that video in. What were some of the specific things that normal everyday folks mentioned when you asked them about the election?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like there was sort of this general consensus or feeling amongst people. I would describe it as resigned apprehension, you know, like the rest of the world. Again, people here, they're paying attention to what's going on and waiting in anticipation to see what's going to happen. There's so much at stake in this election, and I think everyone around the world knows that. So that's, you know, inevitably people are sort of, you know, people are going to be paying attention to what's happening. But at the same time, a lot of the people that I spoke to, you know, said they're not really expecting much out of what happens on Tuesday. At the end of the day, on one hand, if Trump gets elected, they kind of know what to expect from him at this point. It's sort of just been the worst of the worst that you can expect in terms of foreign policy towards the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, you know, if it's another 4 years of Trump, Palestinians are expected, you know, to see more foreign policy changes that essentially serve to solely benefit Israel, whether that means more settlements, moving forward with annexation, the continued denial of Palestinian rights, et cetera. On the other hand, people were saying that they don't, you know, they would like for Trump to lose, but at the same time, if Biden wins, it's not going to mean this huge change for Palestinians and this sudden awakening in terms of American foreign policy towards Palestine. You know, people told me that Biden might be better for the Americans, but for me as a Palestinian, I don't necessarily think that he's the best choice. And that same person actually expressed that they had wished Bernie was in Biden's place, because they thought that Bernie could actually offer, you know, solution for a lot of the issues facing Palestinians. But yeah, people said that, you know, they're not really, they're holding their breath. You know, Joe Biden has consistently expressed his staunch support for Israel. And, you know, policy analysts in the U.S. have said that Joe Biden is one, if not, you know, one of the most pro-Israel Democratic candidates that we've had. And Palestinians know that. So at the end of the day, whether it's Trump or Biden, Palestinians are prepared to be at the receiving end of the same pro-Israel U.S. policy, you know, that's dictated their lives for the past few decades, you know, especially since the Oslo Accords were signed. So there's definitely this feeling of, okay, we want to know what's going to happen. It's obviously going to affect our lives, as we've seen over the past 4 years. And it would be great if Trump lost, just because he's been so bad for us and so bad for so many other people. But they don't think that Joe Biden is going to be some big saving grace for them. They think it's going to be a lot of what they've seen from the Obama administration and even before that.
What are the lingering feelings about Obama and his administration and Biden's connection?
You know, one of the Palestinian women that I spoke to, and you'll see her in the video, she said, you know, Joe Biden was the vice president for Obama, and Palestinians had really high hopes for Obama when he was elected, because he talked up a big game about, you know, wanting to promote peace and, you know, change all of these things in the region and empower Palestinians, et cetera. But at the end of the day, even, you know, during the Obama presidency, the U.S. continued to give billions of dollars in military funding to Israel. Obama did very little to change anything for the better for Palestinians on the ground. He more so just maintained the status quo. So Palestinians were very disappointed. You know, I get this feeling, or a lot of people have expressed, that Palestinians were very disappointed in the Obama administration and Obama's time in office. And so people mentioned that, you know, well, Joe Biden was Obama's vice president, and he sort of represents the same, you know, establishment Democratic Party that Obama was a part of. So I think that sort of resentment towards the Obama administration and what they failed to do for the Palestinians is definitely carrying over into people and what they think about Joe Biden.
Have you spoken to anybody in the PA, the Palestinian Authority, or local governments that you know? And what are the sort of the political segment in Palestine thinking about this or looking forward to with Joe Biden or not?
You know, officials in the Palestinian Authority are definitely hoping and praying for a Biden win with the hopes that a Trump loss, you know, will somehow give them the opportunity to reverse at least some of the devastating effects that the Trump presidency has had on Palestinian society, specifically the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian Authority. So, you know, an end to the Trump administration would at least give, you know, the Trump administration and all the policies that they've enacted over the past few years have, you know, really backed the PA and the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, into a corner. And the Palestinian leadership have played all their cards. They don't have much leverage, you know, over the U.S. and Israel anymore. So they've just been forced to sort of accept whatever policy Netanyahu and Trump declare as, you know, law or fact or whatever. So, you know, I think there's definitely the hope amongst the Palestinian leadership that if Trump were to lose, they would have a chance to reverse some of those policies, specifically in terms of, you know, financial aid and sort of the economic hardships that Palestinians have had to endure because of the Trump administration. So one major point that people have talked about and a lot of the local media as well is reporting on is sort of Abbas's desire to end his protest against Trump and Netanyahu's annexation plan. So basically when Israel announced annexation and that they were going to move forward with it with the full backing of the U.S., in protest, Abbas refused to accept, you know, the tax transfers of hundreds of million dollars in tax revenues that Israel collects on behalf of the Palestinian Authority. So those lack of tax refunds have forced the PA to enforce major salary cuts across the board and to all their civil servants, so government workers, teachers, et cetera. And those salary cuts have been maintained throughout the pandemic. And that has exerted a lot of pressure on the Palestinian leadership from the citizenry. So there's sort of this idea that, okay, if Biden wins, and Biden has expressed that he does not support annexation and is not going to give the U.S. approval of that. So one point is that, okay, well, if, you know, the U.S. isn't supporting annexation anymore, then we can sort of end this protest in the form of refusing tax revenue so that they'll be able to get that money back and start accepting that money again and pay their civil servants and salaries, et cetera. At the same time, you know, Palestinian leaders are hoping that a Joe Biden presidency will reinstate essential funding for their government and for organizations like USAID and UNRWA, which were stripped of funding under Trump and have left, you know, huge, you know, gaping holes in terms of Palestinian humanitarian relief and the ability of the government to operate. From what I've heard, that's sort of the most immediate desire of the PA and Palestinian leaders is to sort of reverse all those economic hits that they've taken under the Trump administration. In terms of, you know, diplomatically, there's this feeling that there's not much that the leadership can do to reverse some of the big diplomatic decisions that Trump took. The biggest one, for example, was moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Joe Biden has already said that he's not going to move the embassy back. So that's a huge loss for Palestinians. You know, that decision is done and it's likely going to stay that way. You know, whether it's Joe Biden and whoever comes after him, it's unlikely that the embassy is going to be moved back. Another would be sort of the reopening of the Palestinian mission to the U.S. in Washington. It definitely remains unclear if that would be reopened under a Biden administration. So I think, diplomatically, there is definitely a hope that at least under a Biden a Biden administration would give way to some warming of relations, you know, back between the Palestinian Authority and the U.S. government. And there's the big hope that a Trump loss would mean sacking the deal of the century and Trump's whole plan for the region and the reinstatement of the two-state solution and sort of working within those parameters. Again, that's the Palestinian leadership. That's not necessarily a position shared by all Palestinians. Not that Palestinians support Trump's plan, but a lot of Palestinians, especially young Palestinians, feel disenfranchised and disoriented with the whole peace process and the two-state solution. And, you know, have expressed that the two-state solution died a long time ago and the facts on the ground are not conducive towards, you know, moving forward with that plan. But in terms of the PA, I think that they just like to get rid of Trump's plans for the region and at least move back to a time where they had a little bit more control over the negotiating process and sort of how they wanted to move forward.
It's a very weak position to be in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the normalization stuff. The United Arab Emirates has signed this agreement or come into whatever this agreement is. Bahrain did as well, and now Sudan. In our staff Slack channel, we've been having some fun at the kind of ridiculous nature of that Sudan phone call. People can check out our Instagram story for a humorous take on Avi Berkowitz, Boy Wonder, at that event. What are people feeling about those deals?
Yeah. The Palestinian reaction to normalization, especially, you know, the first deal that was published was the deal with the UAE. It was a very, you know, visceral reaction on part of, you know, the Palestinian public, just being, you know, this feeling of outrage, and people were frustrated. And, you know, normalization has been a touchy subject, point of contention between, you know, Palestinians and, you know, other Arab countries and people around the Arab world for years now. But when this deal was announced between the UAE and Israel, you know, Palestinians described it as a stab in the back to their cause and, you know, the ultimate betrayal of the Palestinian cause and sort of the fight for Palestinian liberation, because a lot of Palestinians share the view that the full liberation of Arab people, like around the region from the dictatorships and regimes that they are under the control over, is also contingent upon Palestinian liberation as well. So the Palestinian cause has always been one of the most, if not, you know, the most important sort of pan-Arab cause that has united Arab nations for many years. So to see, and you know, Palestinians, we're not under the impression that normalization and sort of warm relations between Israel and Arab nations was new. You know, people have known for years that these diplomatic and commercial relationships have existed under the table for some time now, but it was the announcement of it and the fanfare around the announcement that really upset Palestinians and frustrated them. And someone that I spoke to, she said, you know, Egypt and Jordan have had diplomatic relations with Israel for years now, because Egypt and Jordan both share a border with Israel and Palestine. And so diplomatic relations between the countries have always kind of been essential in terms of things like travel and trade. But she mentioned that, you know, this time around with the UAE and with Bahrain specifically, it felt very different to normalization or the establishment of relations with Egypt and Jordan. You know, she said this time around, it's been celebrated, and normalization, yeah, has been celebrated by the UAE and Israeli governments and, you know, a lot of the institutions under the control of the government, and a lot of people and important public figures in the UAE as well have sort of promoted normalization and celebrated it, you know, with these flights back and forth to the country and welcoming economic relationships and commercial relationships and the filming of photo shoots for Israeli brands in Dubai and vice versa. And so this whole sort of fanfare around these agreements has, you know, been particularly difficult for Palestinians as well, because the fact that normalization isn't just happening but being so celebrated, I think, has definitely touched a nerve. And specifically with the agreement between the UAE and Israel was, as you know, one of the conditions or that was set forth by the agreement was the UAE said, you know, we're establishing full diplomatic relations with Israel in exchange for Israel putting an end to annexation. So the UAE was essentially, you know, taking credit for putting a stop to annexation. And there were many issues that Palestinians had with that, first and foremost, because annexation is ongoing and it has been going on for a long time. You know, while Israel has not officially declared sovereignty over the West Bank, Israel continues to confiscate Palestinian land and build settlements. And Israel's violations in the occupied Palestinian territory have continued since the deal with the UAE. So it's particularly, you know, insulting for Palestinians and Palestinian activists and human rights defenders who have worked tirelessly to fight annexation for the UAE to take credit for something that Israel never even intended on stopping in the first place. So that's the general response and attitude towards normalization. People are upset by it. People don't like it. But at the same time, people, Palestinians, you know, understand that Unfortunately, a lot of these deals are likely to continue, especially in the case of, you know, countries like Sudan, where the U.S. played a role in essentially bullying the country into, you know, accepting normalization with Israel in order to lift all these different economic sanctions on the country. So Palestinians are aware of the fact that, you know, these normalization deals are likely to continue, while I definitely think that people hope they won't. But there is a feeling, and a lot of people have expressed, that while, you know, these different Arab regimes and dictatorships might be establishing normalization with Israel, there's still very much of a feeling of solidarity between Palestinians and, you know, Arab people around the region. In the UAE, we didn't see as much of an outpouring of support from the citizenry, just because of the way that the UAE dictatorship and regime works, is that people are unable to sort of express their rejection of that deal. But there was a huge outpouring of support from citizens in Bahrain and Sudan and across the Arab world, sort of saying, you know, we, no matter what our governments do, we stand with the Palestinian people. And I think that that is really important to Palestinians. And that's definitely a strategy. I spoke to some Palestinian activists and they said, you know, the Palestinian government has not really shown any signs of a real strategy when it comes to combating normalization in the region, but at least amongst Palestinian people and activists, they're trying to, you know, galvanize their, you know, Arab brothers and sisters and people around the region, you know, around their cause, and sort of reminding people that, you know, their liberation in whatever country they're living in is, you know, inextricably linked to Palestinian liberation as well.
Yeah. And Donald Trump, in that event, in that phone call with the president of Sudan and Prime Minister Netanyahu, he all but said Saudi Arabia is going to come into this in the next few days or weeks, and that there are other countries that are talking about it as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens between the general population in the Middle East and the governments that seem to be moving forward with this.
Yeah, and I mean, coming back to the election, that's another thing where, you know, maybe these normalization deals are going to be fast-tracked or promoted even further under Trump, but I'm not necessarily of the belief that they'll stop even if Biden becomes president, because at this point, it's sort of this domino effect in the region, and a lot of the leaders of these countries see it as economically and politically beneficial to them to establish relations with Israel. So whether Trump's there or not, I think that these deals are going to continue.
Yeah, if Biden wins, you know, Trump is still going to be the president until January. So I think that he and Jared Kushner and these other folks have an even greater incentive to push this stuff as hard as they can. So I think that we're in for some more of these changes. Those of us in the movement tend to think of it as a loss that this normalization stuff is happening. But at the same time, it offers perhaps another lever. Because the more that the Israeli economy and the government is tied into the region, the more influence that those regional players are going to have. So, you know, if leadership changes in some of these other countries that have established and deepened these normalization ties with the Israeli government, that could possibly be a lever to push on. But of course, that'll take a lot of work.
Right. And that's something, you know, that's a perspective that I think definitely people have discussed, but when I've spoken to, you know, some political analysts here as well, that would require a strategy and actual support of Palestinian government and leadership. And they've shown nothing. I mean, I asked someone about, you know, what has the Palestinian leadership, you know, what are Palestinian citizens and civilians waiting for in terms of their leadership? What has the government been doing? Because we really haven't seen anything, you know, from them. But maybe, you know, she was prone to some information that we didn't have. And she said, you know, their strategy has literally just been, every time one of these normalization deals happened, their strategy has just been to sort of wave their hands in the air and say, hey, you know, we're still here. To their fellow Arab governments, and that's it, you know. So it's the strategy in terms of combating normalization or sort of finding any way, finding any sort of leverage in these situations is non-existent. And the Palestinian Authority is doing nothing to fight these deals except for, you know, empty statements and continued, you know, denunciations of what's going on without actual, you know, without actually, you know, doing anything or making any move from the ground. And unfortunately, that's left the Palestinian people and especially the Palestinian youth who are going to be forced to live with the consequences of, you know, this government's decisions for however many years to come. It's just left them in a position where they are just sort of being forced to witness everything that's happening around them and to sort of take everything that's going on without having anyone to represent them and help them, you know, fight this and give them a voice. So it's quite disheartening to see what's happening and the total lack of response from the government, from the leaders here.
What has been the effect of some of the policies in the that the Trump administration has pushed, but also some of the things that the Netanyahu administration has pushed that you've just experienced that have caused changes, you know, in your day-to-day routine?
Living in Palestine and living in the midst of Palestinian communities. And, you know, obviously I've experienced somewhat firsthand, by no means up to the same level that Palestinians have experienced these policy changes, but, you know, I've seen it all. I've witnessed the immediate effects of what these policy changes have meant. You know, I remember when, after Trump was elected, I remember when he announced that the U.S. was recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And, you know, immediately it sort of sparked all of these protests around the West Bank and Bethlehem, where I live. You know, it definitely changed the way that Palestinians were living their lives, that they were moving around in, you know, the sort of immediacy of it all. And then, you know, in the long term, after witnessing, you know, what the defunding of UNRWA, for example, has done to Palestinian refugee communities in Bethlehem, you know, I've seen friends and family slowly, you know, their healthcare coverage been, you know, slowly stripped back as a result, you know, of these losses in funding. I've seen, you know, you mentioned during the COVID pandemic, you know, how Palestinian refugees were, you know, not just extremely at risk compared to some of the other communities in Palestine, but they were also substantially lacked a lot of the emergency funding that they needed from organizations like UNRWA. You know, living as an American in Palestine during the 2016 elections and sort of throughout the Trump administration has definitely been a unique experience. I've witnessed, you know, firsthand what, you know, how devastating the policies of the Trump administration have been for Palestinians. And at the same time, you know, as an American woman of color, you know, a lot of my rights and civil liberties have been, you know, under attack under the Trump administration. So it's been really interesting to feel the impacts of those policies, but from far away and not actually being able to be in the US during times when I've really wanted to, and to be able to, you know, stand up, for example, during the Black Lives Matter movement and protests that were happening, especially this summer. So it's definitely been a unique experience to be an American living in Palestine under this administration.
Yeah. Last, before we go, can you give us a brief update on what's going on with the COVID pandemic there here in the U.S.? The government, such as it is,
right,
has basically given up any pretense of trying to control it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw where Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, just flat out said, we're not trying to control the pandemic, which was obvious.
Yeah.
But it's really kind of striking just how quickly things have changed here. What's going on in Palestine?
Yeah, so, you know, this sort of second wave of COVID is going around, is sort of spreading around the world, in the U.S., in Europe, et cetera. And Palestinians sort of, at least the way that the Palestinian Ministry of Health framed it, sort of went through their second wave over the summer, actually. So, you know, we first went into lockdown here in March when there were a few cases reported in Bethlehem. And over those first few months of lockdown, and it was a very strict lockdown, there were only a couple hundred cases. I'm not sure if it even went higher than 600 total cases. Again, you always have to factor in the fact that compared to Israel and other countries, the Palestinian Ministry of Health was not testing at nearly high enough, at nearly of a high enough rate. So there were a lot more cases that we didn't actually know about back then. But then, so, you know, there were only a few hundred cases in the first few months. And then suddenly when June came and the lockdown had officially been lifted, those numbers completely spiked and got into the tens of thousands. And so I have the numbers pulled up right now. The total number of registered cases in Palestine, and this is coming from the Palestinian Ministry of Health data, where they factor in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. So the total number of recorded cases is standing somewhere around 65,800 cases. But they say that actually less than 10,000 of those are actually currently active. So that's very promising for, you know, for the Palestinians and for Palestinian officials in terms of numbers, but there's a lot of skepticism amongst the population here of if those number, you know, how much those numbers can be trusted just because of, the fact that testing here is not done at, a high enough rate, like I mentioned before, to really get
it's not done here at a high enough rate.
Yeah, to get a good idea of, you know, what's going on. So there's definitely this belief that there's way more cases out there that we don't know about. But at the same time, again, like the rest of the world, I think Palestinians have really experienced, you know, quarantine fatigue and sort of COVID fatigue, because the first round of lockdowns here was very, very strict. I mean, everything was shut. Movement was completely banned, even within the cities as well. And so, you know, people got tired here really quickly, especially financially. People, you know, their government wasn't giving them any assistance. And so people needed to get back to work in order to put food on the table for their families. And so, you know, there are some mask ordinances and masks are required. Again, we've seen that it's enforced sometimes and sometimes it's not by the police. It honestly kind of just depends on the mood of the police that day, if they want to fine people for wearing masks or not. The police and government officials here don't even wear masks themselves. You know, people know that COVID is an issue here, and it's affected a lot of people and it's devastated a lot of families. You know, there are more than 560 deaths that have been reported across Palestine due to the coronavirus. So it's just, again, like I think in the US and a lot of other places, it's just become a part of life here. And people, you know, each person takes the individual precautions that they can. I would find it very hard to believe that the Palestinian Authority, that the government here would be able to enforce a second lockdown just because of the fact that people, you know, financially and economically have been so devastated by the pandemic already, that the government itself wouldn't be able to survive what would happen if people were pushed further into poverty by another lockdown. And I think the government doesn't want to know what would happen if that were the case and if people were to suddenly turn on their leaders. So things are very much up in the air. COVID is definitely still an issue. And I think we're waiting to see if this second, third wave, you know, ends up hitting Palestine again, like it did for Israel last month. You know, Israel was forced into another very stringent lockdown. So we'll see what happens.
Well, please stay safe. And I'm sure that we're going to hear more from you in the next week and the weeks ahead as we go through whatever is going to happen in this election. And then the period until January, we're in a turbulent time. If people are interested in hearing more from Yumna, of course, please check out our website. You can also subscribe to our email newsletters at mondawise.net/newsletters every Tuesday. If you sign up for the COVID-19 in Palestine newsletter, every Tuesday Yumna is writing a dispatch about life under occupation during a pandemic. And then on Fridays, we send out kind of an update of statistics and key stories related to the COVID pandemic in Palestine. Yumna, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. It was great to speak with you about all of this. Instead of just reading about the elections on Twitter, it's great to talk to other people about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, everybody should stay off Twitter. Okay. Thanks, Yumna.
Thank you.